Gíb galéir agus tá fáilte rós go dtí an uair gaile chun seo ar tin neci seachas ní ar an maidin dónach seo. Good Sunday morning and welcome to another edition of the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM, coming to you from Murray Street in the Market on this cold Sunday morning. A little bit of frost out there, minus 6, minus 7 area when I looked at the temperature thermometer before I left the house. This morning we get to talk to John Furlong, and John is the Chief Executive Officer of the Vancouver Organising Committee for the 2010 Olympics. And I linked up with John yesterday morning. While he was here in Ottawa, he has to leave early this morning. He was going to come into Studio Live, but we had to go and link up and record this morning's interview. So I'll be sharing that with you. And it's fascinating to hear John talk. John is a native of Clonmel, County Tipperary, and grew up in Dublin. And to find himself steering the ship of the Vancouver Olympics is something that we can all be very proud of with our own heritage, and see how the Irish continue to excel in a variety of areas. We still have some competitions running on the web. There's an opportunity to get in and enter for a pair of tickets for Leahy at the National Arts Centre, and that is on December 18th. And there's also an opportunity to win a pair of tickets for John McDermott, and John is at Centrepoint Theatre on December 19th. Sunday next, we will have Sarah Thornton here in the show, and Sarah returned yesterday. I didn't get to talk to her yet. Sarah came back from having spent since the 8th of August in Ireland, where she was representing Ottawa at the Rose of Tralee. And I want to thank everyone who turned out for the concert on Friday night. It was a tremendous success. It was a fundraiser for the Rose of Tralee for the Ottawa Centre to finance 2010. And it's a roaring success, so we're delighted with that. And the search is now underway for a 2010 Ottawa Rose. So if you know anybody that may be interested and may be a good candidate, go on to www.roseoftralee.ca. And you'll see the criteria there, and there's application form and everything else you need to know. I have to ask you, given the time of year that's in it, if you'd be willing to donate some new warm clothing, mitts, scarves, toques, hats, socks, especially those, because people's hands and toes and head gets cold at this time of the year, and these will be passed on to those that are less fortunate than ourselves at the 18th annual Christmas dinner for the less fortunate, which is at the Heart and Crown, of course, on the morning of the 25th. But also turkey and desserts are also very welcome, and the turkey and desserts can be dropped off 22nd, 3rd or 4th down at the Heart and Crown. But you can drop the warm clothing off here at Chin on 30 Murray Street any time during regular business hours. We're going straight over and meeting John Furlong. I have the honour this morning of bringing to you John Furlong, who is here in Ottawa for the Olympic Torch Relay. And as part of the Irish community in Ottawa, I'm honoured to be sitting opposite an Irishman who is heading up the Vancouver Olympic Committee. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, John.
Good morning, pleasure.
Just as a bit of background, because the big question is, you know, here you have a guy from Tipperary, and it's a long way to Tipperary, heading up the Vancouver Olympics. Where in Tipperary to start with? Where's the family from?
Well, my parents are from Wexford. I was born in Clonmel. My father's career after World War II switched from being an educator to he became one of the top officials in the Irish prison system. And we ended up moving from prison to prison to prison to prison until we ended up in Mountjoy in Dublin,
okay,
which is where he retired from. And my father was kind of he was the lead governor in that system. And right. So we ended up living in every prison in the country, which sort of kind of goes to tell you quite a bit about my personality. But so that's how we were, three or four of us were born in Clonmel and the rest elsewhere. And yeah, we moved on through other places and ended up in Dublin.
And of course, one could joke and say the Irish have done very well. Traditionally, the emigrants who were going through the prison system were predominantly in Australia.
Yes, they were. And in fact, I was just making some jokes about that yesterday, about how awfully look-alike Australian rules football is to Gaelic football. It has to have its roots there.
That's right. That's right. Growing up then, being a transient, because I can relate, my father was in the bank. I'm not from anywhere. And that's one of the interesting aspects that allows, I think, you to resettle. Did you find that as a result of growing up in that environment, when you did make a transition from Ireland to Canada, that resettlement wasn't that difficult, and that the roots, while very strong, were not a negative?
Yeah, it's funny, I've actually never reflected on it that way, but when I think about it, we were used to it. You know, it wasn't that hard. You know, in Ireland, it's the idea of moving away is not one that prevails when you're growing up, but we moved a lot, so it wasn't such a great... I would say it wasn't so traumatic, although I have to say that when I landed in Canada as a young teacher, I was pretty lonely and at first homesick. And for 6 months, I thought I had made the worst decision of my life. But I was also very infected by the spirit of the country and the pioneer value structure here, and the way sort of people were all pitching in. And, you know, a number of kind of interesting things happened to me that kind of made me feel like, you know, I think this is a place for me. And, you know, like a lot of young fellas when they're growing up in Ireland, I think there's probably lots of young fellas could relate to this. I sort of went away for a couple of years and fully expected, you know, for a bit of adventure, really. And I would end up coming back, and I was having a fairly good athletic career in Ireland at the time. And so I just thought this was going to be a bit of a trip, really. But I became addicted and hooked to Canada, and now I feel very grateful for the way I grew up, the values, the discipline of my own childhood, and I feel it's like made a big difference in my life here and the way I see the world. And, you know, so I think, you know, that kind of transience is probably it's and in this country, because it's so big, you have to be able to adapt, to move around. There's just nothing that's close by, you know, so you're moving all the time. So I think it does prepare you a bit. So, I mean, I know so many young friends of mine in Ireland that, you know, I haven't really maintained the connection with, who've never moved. Mm-hmm. They haven't ever gone anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that so much as a statement of anything other than it's the Irish way, you know. But at least it was when I was growing up.
And yet, one of the things I have found is that having emigrated, you have a foot in two camps, and you can never go back. And by that, I don't mean you can go back, but you can never go back to exactly what you sent. You never go back to a mentality that you never moved. And the expansion of your horizons brings the wealth of what you grew up with into the new world.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's interesting you say that, because when I came first, I sort of, I would describe it this way. I kind of lived my life inside a fence in Ireland, and there was, you know, a sort of a way to live and behave and grow up and all that, and I very much enjoyed it. I loved it. I still do. But in Canada, I climbed over the fence and I wandered off and did other things. Couldn't get back in, you know. I went back, I tried, I went home for a bit, and I really was a stranger. And it's not that I didn't like it, I did. In fact, I liked it more than when I was there.
Right.
The appreciation, I mean, there's never a Saturday morning I don't turn on soccer from over there. There's never a time when I don't track down a rugby game that Ireland's played in. I pay attention to how the country's doing. I help when they ask me. You know, so I still feel that connection. But I'm here, and you know, and I love it here, and I like the fact that I'm here with a very strong Irish connection, and which I'll never give up ever. You know, so it's worked for me. It's made an enormous difference in my life to have had the grounding that I had there, and you know, I think it's looked after me, frankly.
So, John, what age were you when you did emigrate?
I arrived here close to the end of 1974. I had actually been on the Dublin Gaelic football team that year that went on to win a bunch of All-Irelands, and it's one of the great regrets of my life. I was on that team that you was referred to as Heffo's Heroes for
yes,
a
I
while.
Remember,
In fact, in the early part of the first year, I helped train that team. And then when the Dublin bombing happened and my cousin was killed and my father died from a heart attack shortly after, you know, I really lost the stomach to play. And I think that was one thing. And then, you know, my father passing away, it was my sort of best pal, really. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was time. The opportunity came, and it was time to go. And so I came here, and But I did come thinking it would be a break as opposed to permanent.
And when you did arrive, where did you come to? What part of Canada?
Well, I landed initially in Edmonton for about a half an hour, and I had the most extraordinary experience there when I landed, and then I went on to Prince George, and I spent most of the next six or seven years in Prince George, and then went on down to the Lower Mainland, lived on Vancouver Island for a while, and then I moved to the city, Vancouver, for a couple of reasons. One, it was a bit of a fun career opportunity, but wanted to get my kids into the city where they could stay at home and go to university and so on. And then all through all of this time, I was involved in the Canadian sort of support system, just was pitching in. When I landed at Edmonton, I had this extraordinary experience with a customs officer who sort of made the comment to me, you know, welcome to Canada, make us better, which I thought was this sort of incoming, you know, sort of last thing you get told before you, like, the idea is that this country doesn't work if you don't pitch in. So I sort of always walked around knowing that it's expected that you participate and you support and you contribute, and I think Canada works better when people do. So I got involved in athletics and the Canadian Olympic Committee, and one thing led to another, and I don't know whether it's been in the right place at the wrong time or the wrong place at the right time, but when this happened, we were in the very infant stages of thinking about bidding for the Olympics, and I had just finished a term as the chairman of sport for British Columbia, and I thought, you know what, I got to help out here, and I was asked to help, and I was frankly really a tier two volunteer in that effort in the early stages, but one thing led to another, and like all things, you know, you sit around and you watch things and you think, oh, we got to do better than this, and you start, you know, winding up your participation a bit, and suddenly you own half the room, and then you own more, and suddenly you're in charge, and that's kind of really how it happened. And I don't think anybody came pursuing me because of my particular talents or anything, but I sort of learned it as I went along, and here I am.
Let's take a break and have a piece of music.
Okay.
What would you like us to play for you?
Well, one of the you know, one of the pieces of music that I refer to often, I even use it in speeches. I took a line from this song when I was speaking at the funeral of the death of my best friend Jack Poole, who was the chairman of the Games, who died just a few months ago. It's a line from the movie The Old Man, where this boy is wandering with his father, and he makes the reference that he taught me things not known to kings. And I think it's the most fantastic line of the things that you learn when you're wandering along that you don't suspect you're going to learn, but they stay with you all your life and they fill you with this spirit of wonder. And it's kind of been one of those pieces of music I've loved all my life.
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour on Chin 97.9 FM, and this is the Fury Brothers and The Old Man. We'll be back with you in a moment.
The tears have hardly shed now. We've said our last goodbye. His soul's been blessed and he's laid to rest. It's now I feel the love. He was more than just a father, a teacher, my best friend. He can still be heard in the tunes we shared when we played them on our own. No, forget him, but he made me what I am. Though he may be gone, memories remain gone. And I miss him, my old man. As a boy, he'd take me walking by mountain, field and stream. He showed me things not known to kings, a secret between him and me. Like the colours of the pheasant as he rises in the dawn, and how to fish and make a wish beside a holy tree. No, I never will forget him, but he made me what I am. Though he may be gone, memories linger. the rock. And how I miss him, dear man. I thought he'd live forever. He seemed so big and strong. But the minutes fly, the years roll by, for a father and a son. And suddenly, when it happened, there was so much left unsaid. No second chance to tell him thanks for everything he's done. Though I never will forget him, for he made me what I am. Though he may become a grizzly gone. And how we miss him, the old man. Thank you. Good night. Thank you.
Ottawa Little Theatre is pleased to present the hilarious hit musical I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change, from December 1st to the 19th. The trials and tribulations of being single, dating, marriage, loss and heartbreak are hilariously explored in the phenomenally long-running off-Broadway show. You will leave the show thinking, were they talking about me? For tickets, call the box office at 613-233-8948 or for information, visit www.ottawalittletheatre.com. Put a little theatre in your life today.
CJLL Chin Radio Ottawa is proud to present, once again, the 2010 Chin Radio Winter Picnic. There's truly something for everyone this winter at the Chin Winter Picnic. A great all-inclusive vacation in the Mayan Riviera, the Sandals Catacal Beach and Spa Resort, located just 10 minutes from Playa del Carmen at the edge of an exotic jungle. Looking for a classic getaway in a secluded oceanfront paradise? Or a family adventure with kids' activities, sailing and snorkeling? The 2010 Chin Winter Picnic offers all of this and more, along with six excellent restaurants, nightly shows, and comfortable accommodations beside a great beach. In partnership with Signature Vacations and Sky Service. From February 5th to February 12th, 2010, with a non-stop direct flight from Ottawa to the Mayan Riviera, it's the vacation of your dreams at a low, low price. Don't delay. Book today with Ports of Call Travel Services at 613-238-2400, extension 221 and 222. 613-238-2400, extension 221 and 222. See you there.
Sponsored by Unico, bringing real taste home. Park and Fly Ottawa, Aditech Printing and Design.
The little Irish village in the heart of the Byward Market had its humble beginnings in 1992 with the now famous Heart and Crown. A second venue, the Snug Pub, since 1997. And then there's Mother McGinty's and Roisin Dubh, Black Rose, since 2001. They complete the Irish village, each a treasure in its own way. Visit the Irish village. We can accommodate groups of all sizes. Private seating areas, spacious patios, and party rooms. Tell us about your special event and we will take care of the rest. 613-562-0674.
Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM, and we're talking with John Furlong. And John was explaining and telling us about how he got himself to this side of the world. John, you were saying there that you found yourself leading this organisation rather than them headhunting you or anything like that. The organisation that you are now heading is an amazing type of operation, because it's an operation for an event that is, in a sense, a once-off, as distinct from most businesses, which are a process, or that it's to maintain continuity. That must present tremendous challenges.
It does, in the sense that there's really no way to prepare for this. I mean, the people that are doing this work, and there are thousands of them working on the project, you know, they're doing what they're doing for the very first time. There's really nothing out there quite like it. It's very compelling. It never goes away. It's around all the time. It's sort of at night when you close your eyes, it's the last thing you think about. In the morning when you wake up, it's right there on the pillow. So it's one of these things. And the reason it's like that is because the stakes are so high. I mean, this is the biggest event that's ever been staged in Canada. It'll be the largest version of the Winter Olympics ever staged on the planet. It's requiring a massive mobilization of people and facilities and logistics from all over the country, and it's been building for the better part of 14 years. So it's very different, because what happens is that you're very focused on this one period of time where, you know, all of the televisions go on and suddenly you're full frontal and everybody's watching what you're doing, and the work that you have worked so hard on is being evaluated all over the world. So it's a very compelling, very intense, very challenging, very difficult environment to work in, because when it's over, the project, if you like, almost disappears. Mm-hmm. And the people that have spent their lives giving everything they have to this sort of wander off. Most of us, you know, we spend our lives building our careers, and then way off into the distant future we retire and so on. So this is a project that will end, and everybody will go off and hopefully extract from this something that will elevate them to other things in the country. So it is very challenging and compelling, and at a time like we're in now, it's even more so, because all of the young people who are on our team, I mean, I'm closer to the end of my career, but all of the young people on our team have to go on and find new jobs, new careers, and when you stand back from that and you look at them and you think about what they're doing, have to marvel at their effort, because you know, they've really tossed everything up into the air and said, I'm going to do this, it matters for the country, I want to make a contribution, I want my life to mean something. And they know at the end they got to go off and try to find a way to use this to, that's a pretty extraordinary thing to look at. It's a wonderful commitment, and we have thousands of these young people. They're so inspired and driven, and I'm very proud to be their leader. When it's over for me, you know, I'm pretty exhausted, mm-hmm. as we all are, and I don't have burning ambitions beyond. This is about as tough as it gets in life. I mean, there's really no way to describe a project like this. It is moving all the time. The challenges come every minute, decision-making every minute, big decisions. I mean, our operating budget for the Games for you know, 17 days is $1.75 billion just to run the Games. We've had to raise that money ourselves. It's almost all private sector, with the exception of some government money. So it's a very tough project. But all of that said, it's gotten the best out of us. I think it looks good on the country. I mean, it's the utter irony for all of us is that we're trying to deliver this event against the worst economy in Canadian history. And that in and of itself is going to mark this project differently than all previous games, because no one else has had to confront this. But we found a way, and we're heading for the finish line now. We're 60 days away or so, and you know, we're in good shape. We're going to deliver the games with a balanced budget, as much as there are people out there who think otherwise. And so, yeah, it's compelling and difficult, hard to describe. Never seen anybody write anything about it that fully puts it into a, frames it up, but... But the people that are living it, they know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. This is very much a Canadian event.
Yes.
And yet, in Canada, there's always the allegation or accusation that there's a divide at the Rockies.
Yeah.
So one of the challenges you must be presented with is to get across the Rockies and reach as far as St. John's, that they feel included, and that they feel that this is as much a part of Newfoundland as it is a part of British Columbia.
Well, you've touched on something that's rather unique for the Vancouver Games, in the sense that in all previous Winter Olympic Games, the Games have been centered on one city in one region of the country with no vision beyond that. When we launched our bid for the Games, we thought that the Games are powerful. They are rooted in very significant values. They're the values you learn on the playing field growing up, and they're the values that young people can grow better lives from. And we chose to make this about the country. We actually, you know, most people expected that this would be all about Vancouver. We chose otherwise because we thought we could. We thought the project had that strength, that ability to reach. And so we chose to make it Canada's game. With the day we did that, we made it 10 times more difficult. because wandering around Canada talking, well, we're in Ottawa today and tonight the Olympic flame will arrive here and all you have to do is stand in the crowd to see the effect that this has on people. We've been in Newfoundland many times. We've been everywhere in the country. And I think in many ways Canadians have looked at us and wondered, are you kidding me? Are you really here? Is this really ours too? Basically, the goal we had here was to not stage an Olympic Games that on the 12th of February people would flick on their television sets and be captivated for 17 days and think, wasn't that great? Almost like an extended, wonderful movie. What we wanted to do was to have Canadians be in a state of a positive anxiety by February 12th, where they would turn on their and feel what they were looking at was theirs. They actually did it with us, that they were part of it, that they, in whatever role they played, that they were part of it. I don't know if you're aware of this, but over the period of the Games, every province in Canada has a day at the Games. Newfoundland has a day at the Games. So on that day, while the athletics are happening and the venues are full and there's excitement everywhere, Newfoundland will own the stage that day and they will be providing the entertainment and the culture and they will be the ones that enrich the atmosphere in the city. No one's ever tried it before. And in Canada, it ain't easy. Newfoundland is closer to Ireland than it is to Vancouver. So what we've done, it's got everyone's attention because most thought impossible, can't do it, shouldn't even try, but we have. And we're halfway home with this flame. And I would say that if you went back across the country towards eastern Canada and started to look at what we've left behind, you would find pretty happy country over there. The rest of the country we're on our way to, and so we're very excited about the vision we had to make this about everybody and not about a few.
You made an interesting comment there because you said, in fact, Newfoundland is closer to Ireland than it is to Vancouver. And that's true in more ways than one, because the people of Newfoundland would probably identify themselves closer with Ireland than with Vancouver.
Yes.
And that also has been a tremendous bridge-building effort that's been going on to build and to be inclusive and narrow that gap.
Yeah, it is. And in Newfoundland, well, here's the other thing, that in Canada, because it's such a vast place, six times the size of Europe, we really, in many ways, are a bunch of countries in one country. And in Newfoundland, they have a spirit a bit like the one we grew up in Ireland, and most of the people are from there at one point or another. And when you're in Newfoundland, you feel this. There's just something about Newfoundland that is very different than BC. And we thought, well, look, because of that, and because of the cultural sort of unique atmosphere of Newfoundland, why would we not let them take the stage on their terms and enrich our games? I mean, the practical advantages are obvious because it's better for us. Mm-hmm. We don't have to do it. We don't have to tell that story. Yet we're trying to tell an all-Canadian story, but let's let them do it. They embraced this so fast, you wouldn't believe. And the Premier of Newfoundland, Danny Williams, thought this was the coolest idea to come out here and be part of this, to take the stage. And every part of the country is doing that. And I think for us, you know, to be honest, I think we're feeling a little smug about how well this has gone, that they've all looked at this and went, are they actually really serious? And I think we're feeling very good about the fact that they're all coming. There's no one not coming. Every province and territory has a deal with Vancouver 2010. That's huge because in this country, you know, we don't agree on all that much. I mean, we were in the House of Commons the other day with the Olympic flame, and just to stand at the back of that hall and look at all those men and women who go into that house day after day and argue and fight over all kinds of stuff, not that day. That's the power of what we're working with, and that's what's special about this.
John, let's take another break for music. What would we go with on this break?
The Parting Glass.
Parting Glass. And why Parting Glass?
Well, One of the favorite scenes from any movie I've ever watched is the last scene of the movie Waking Ned Devine, when the lads walk up to the top of the cliff and toast the guy who made them all rich. And I thought it was the most fantastic movie and moment where the camera moved back and shot that wonderful geography and the happy, simple moment of pleasure that those guys were having up there. And it's a wonderful piece of music, and whenever I see it or hear it or watch it or feel it, it makes me feel good.
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on 97.9 FM, and we're chatting with John Furlong. This is the Party Glass. We'll be back with you in a moment.
Oh, all the money I had, I spent it in good company, and all the harm I've ever
Front and Centre presents John McDermott with guest Russell DeCarle at Centrepoint Theatre, Friday, December 19th at 7:30 p.m. John performs stories of broken relationships, alcoholism, unselfish devotion to country, the grief and pain from the loss of a loved one, and the joy of life. Tickets from $47.50 online at centrepointtheatre.com or through the box office at 613-580-2700. The Monterey Inn is your premier choice for an exceptional stay in a resort setting along the Rideau River, close to the airport and a short journey to the nation's capital. The Monterey Inn offers a host of features for the discerning visitor that includes meeting and conference facilities, an outdoor heated pool and a fitness center. Drop in and enjoy the fine dining experience of La Bodega Lounge. The Monterey Inn at 2259 Prince of Wales Drive, 613-288-3500 or www.monterey.ca.
Welcome back to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. We are chatting with John Furlong. John, we went out there with the parting glass and we were chatting about the Olympic flame and the provinces are buying in. So you're here in Ottawa because the relay is underway and that is captivating the country. How many people volunteered to, in order to get the flame from Newfoundland back out to Vancouver? How many people were you?
Well, actually, it's a good question. The relay in and of itself probably is the biggest event ever staged in Canada. It's a logistical nightmare to try to pull it together. We have basically 106 days. We've rescued the flame from Greece. They've been given to us. There's a code that where you know, they give you this flame and you're expected to protect it and look after it and, you know, respect the values of the flame. We landed in Victoria. We have 106 days to get from Victoria back to Vancouver and to try to bring the country together. So we had a great debate at Vancouver 2010. Often got, quite animated because the vision was that we go everywhere in this country where people would expect we wouldn't go, and we get within, 90, 91, 92% of the population 1 hour from them, minimum. So that's not easy to do in a country that's as big as Canada. So we mapped out a route and of 45,000 kilometers, making it the longest relay in history in one country. And frankly, we were not interested in the length. We were interested in the people. And so we went off to try to pull all of that together. As we started to put that together, we realized that the numbers of people required to deliver it would be extraordinary. You know, we have basically a situation where we celebrate twice a day, we cover several hundred kilometers every day, and these two celebrations are being set up simultaneously. So we have a team on one and a team on the other, and the flame is moving all the time. And we're up, their team is up at 4 o'clock in the morning, they retire at 10 o'clock at night, and every day. No days off, no breaks, no nothing, and the days that we stop are basically to, look after the vehicles and so on. So there's about 100 vehicles or plus in the entourage, if you like, and there's about 250 people that are managing the day-to-day stuff. Some of them work with us, some are with our sponsors and other partners, but together we're one team and we're all moving toward Vancouver. The grander volunteer contingent for the whole games is a completely different matter. We basically went looking for volunteers a couple of years ago, basically put out a call to the world country, and our goal was to bring the best of the country to Vancouver, to assemble, a great team, to find the characters that would come be confronted with a very difficult challenge for pretty well a month of their lives, but who wouldn't even consider quitting, who wouldn't consider not giving their best every day. And we found them. And what we discovered was that we found way more than we needed, and so we had the advantage, the difficult advantage, I suppose you could say, of looking through all of those and finding the people we needed. On the 1st of February, when the world arrives in Vancouver, when you look at the volunteers that we will use for the games, the volunteers around the relay, which exist all over the country, the volunteers for all of our partners, the performers in the opening ceremonies, all volunteers, closing ceremonies, Paralympic Games, we'll be 50,000 strong. And 15 minutes after it's over, we'll be 50. So we'll be going over a cliff really fast, out of town, and everybody will be gone. But so we are building an enormously positive army of people who are captivated with this mission that they have to really make the country proud. And that part of the job is perhaps the most complex, because we have to find them, screen them, security clear them, make sure they're of the kind of character that we want, get them to Vancouver, train them, assign them, and then, you know, try to hold them together inside of a pretty good team of people and keep them going for the time. And they will be confronted with things we haven't thought about, but because of who they are, we know they'll find ways to solve those problems.
You just said that you've been confronted with things that you haven't thought about, with about 60 days to go or thereabouts. What would be the curveball that has thrown you so far, in what has surprised you most? Is there something that has cropped up that kind of said, wow?
Well, I think we felt along the way we were pretty well organized. We have a great team of people. I mean, this is far from being a story of one or two people. It's a very big organization, and we've got fantastic people. What we tried to do was to put a champion at every desk and then make sure that that person just had that quality, and it's worked beautifully. But I would say that the largest, the most significant thing that's happened to us is something that you can't touch or feel, which is when the economy went over a cliff a year and a half ago. When that happened, it didn't affect us immediately, but we were looking around and there were bodies on the floor everywhere. I mean, companies were going out of business. There were serious ramifications in the community and in the country, and we thought, oops. Even though we were in fairly good shape at the time, we thought there's not a chance we can go to the finish line here and not be affected by this. So we started to rethink all the what-ifs, and we started to replan and reconfigure and recalibrate all our thinking to wait for the tidal wave of craziness that was coming, and it came. Mm-hmm. And we were ready for it. And today, you know, we are 60 days from the finish line or so, and we're going to finish the games with a balanced budget. We've built the venues with a balanced budget. We're an organizing committee that stayed out of trouble. But it was a nasty curveball, because we never thought we were going to be spending the last, you know, year talking about money and budgets. We thought that all of those budgets would be set, people would have the resources they needed to do what they have to do. We're talking, again, $1.75 billion. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But now, everything we do is against the backdrop of money, about cost and so on, because in this country, you don't get to bring in a budget that's not balanced and survive it. And so our job is to deliver a games that lives up to the quality and standard, the wow that people want, but to do it with a balanced budget. That was a stinker for us to have to face up to. But we have, and I think in an odd way, it may turn out to be one of the great legacies of the games, that this group of Canadians that came together figured out a way to deal with an economic mess that came out of nowhere, maybe as well as anyone ever has. I hope so, because I think in many ways that might be a great metaphor for Canada, about the type of people that are here. So that, I'd say, is the biggest one. Going into the games, having had that as the training, as the sort of, as part of the preparations for the games to deal with, we now are in a situation where we have 17 days where we are exposed to the world. People are expecting extraordinary things. They're expecting to turn on the TV set every day and at the end of the day feel this great pleasure that you're supposed to feel. And we know things are going to happen. We're going to wake up one morning and we're going to have 2 feet of snow that we didn't want. And we're going to have to clear it. Mm-hmm. We're going to have things happen that our people have to respond to. And it's getting them ready to deal with that as if they always thought it was coming. That's a big challenge. But I think we'll get there. At the end of the day, you know, all the preparations in the world cannot replace the character you have to show in an event like this. And that's, we think we found the people to show that.
I'm going to wrap up here, John, because I know you have a very, very tight schedule. And I want to thank you for taking time to come on the Gaelic Hour. And everything you've done and everything you have achieved has been, in a sense, a rallying call. And we have another piece of music.
Yes. Well, one of my, honestly, you know, this caught me a bit by surprise. The piece of music is Ireland's Call, and I am, you know, I'm still a great fan of Irish sport. And as the Irish rugby team has grown over the past number of years, I've gotten a great pleasure out of watching them grow and compete. I've got to know the people behind the team. They came to Vancouver recently, and this thing they do at the start of the game, where they stand shoulder to shoulder and sing this song with the crowd, is just about the most inspired thing I've ever seen on an athletic field. And when it happens, I get the biggest bunch of goosebumps up and down my back, and I think it's a fantastic example of a great spirit from a small country. It's, I think, what makes Ireland a giant in a world full of very large landmasses and countries and economies. It makes them a giant. Their spirit is just, you know, it just can't be put down. And I love it for that, and I wish in many ways we had such a song, that when our teams went on the ice here or when we competed, that everybody came together and you could feel it when it was going on. So I love the music. I love the way they sing it. I love the fact that it really rallies the whole country. And for a moment, when that song is being sung, everybody feels like they have something in common with everybody else. And that's pretty cool.
John Furlong, all I can say is that you, in a country like Canada, coming from Ireland, leading a giant of a project, as obviously reflective of the whole ethos coming from Ireland's Call. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the Gaelic Hour.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Come the day and come the hour, come the power and the glory. We have come to answer our country's call. From the four proud provinces of fire.
You are listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM with Austin Cameron. I hope you enjoyed the interview with John Furlong there. Certainly a man we can all be very proud of, that we can hold our heads high as he answers Ireland's call. He mentioned also how the logistics of bringing the flame, the Olympic flame, from the East Coast right over to the West Coast was a marathon relay. And one of the relay runners in that is Rosemary O'Brien. Welcome to the Gaelic Hour, Rosemary.
Thank you, Austin.
So the Irish involvement in the Olympics goes from the feet on the street, literally,
yes,
right up to the top.
It does, for sure, yeah.
So when
we're everywhere.
So when it comes to the feet on the street, where are your feet? What street are your feet going to be on?
Yeah, we are everywhere. I'm out in Rockland, out the east of the city, tomorrow morning at 8:20. And
okay.
I'm running on the main street in Rockland.
And how far have you to run, Leon?
300 metres. I think I'm up for it. I think so. I've been practising.
So, what inspired you, or what caused you to fill out the necessary paperwork or web form in order to carry the flame?
Well, I suppose I'd always followed the Olympics, Austin, and listened to it and got excited about it. And then when I saw this on, or read it in the paper, that you could apply, anybody could apply,
right,
I didn't initially think I would. And then I thought, you know, why sit back and say, well, I should have?
Right.
And
right.
I applied.
Right.
Yeah.
And were you surprised when the notification said,
yes,
you're on?
Yes, I was. I was thrilled and surprised, yeah, I really was. It was very exciting. And I didn't want to tell anyone because I kept thinking, maybe it's not true.
Right.
I didn't want to tell anybody in the beginning.
Yeah.
I didn't even tell Phil or any in the family for a while. Because I thought, well, maybe this is a joke or something.
Right.
Yeah, I was that surprised.
So is the excitement building for you?
It is, even more so, yes. This morning, on the way down here, I'm on my way down to St. Bridget's to the pancake breakfast and to your show. I passed it. It was driving out to Canada, and I live in Canada.
Right.
So there were. It was leaving Canada at 8 o'clock this morning, and I saw it on the highway.
Right.
Coming
right.
along. So.
So the goosebumps are starting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So have you an entourage that'll have the cameras ready to snap?
Well, I've suggested it would be an idea, you know, to a few of them. And yeah, Aisling, one of my daughters, got a new camera for her birthday last week.
Right,
so
right.
She's ready, she said.
So when they came back to you, they just literally said, this is the segment that you're slotted in for.
When they got back, they said, a couple of months ago, they said, you've been accepted,
right.
But don't tell anybody. They did actually tell me not to tell anybody.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, they did tell me not to tell anyone for a while until it's all official.
Okay.
And then when they got back to me, little things, I can't remember, a letter maybe, that part of the selection, you get your suit.
Okay.
And they'd mail that. So once I got the suit, I knew I was in for sure.
Okay.
You know, I'm always a little bit wary, and I knew for sure. And I think that was probably when I told Phil, when the suit arrived in the mail.
Right.
And then I got another letter saying where I would be. So it was kind of a build-up on their part also.
Right.
Yeah, where I'd be running from.
And of course, it is once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Absolutely. I can't believe it. Yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled. And even at home, they're called and they're saying, oh, you know, I'm from Druckle in Port Arlington. I said, up Druckle, run for...
Right.
And we have young girls down in Druckle that did bobsleighing at Hoy's from Port Arlington. I don't know if you're familiar with them. Yeah. They're from my hometown.
Right.
Yeah, young girls.
No, I didn't know that you had a bobsled team in Port
Arlington.
I know,
can you believe that?
No, I'm trying to figure which hill they were coming down.
I don't know either. Yeah, two sisters. Yeah, the Hoy sisters.
Right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Rosemary, you mentioned you're on your way down because you have a pancake breakfast this morning. 10 o'clock.
Yeah, down at St. Bridget's.
Yeah.
And it's very busy already. I can see we're having the man himself, Father Christmas, Santa, coming in this morning.
Okay.
And
he's not carrying the flame, no?
Well, no, he'd like to, I'd say. But he's carrying a lot of other stuff. So we're expecting a lot of young kids down to see him this morning.
Excellent, and, excellent.
Yeah.
And that's always on the second Sunday.
Sunday of the month, yeah.
Yeah.
And this morning we're also in... Irvine, we're introducing our Rose of Tralee to the National Irish Community Centre. Our Rose. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so she'll be down there this morning as well.
We had the nice part of Friday night was I was able, before we started the concert, I had the Rose showing on the big screen.
Yes, yeah.
And I think it helped get the message across and understanding of what it's about. And I have to tell you, we already have one application in.
Oh, okay. Well, so yeah, they, and we have another one. I have the application.
Fantastic, because what we'll do is actually on the website, as soon as an application comes in, now we'll put the photographs and put the bios up there and get that moving.
Another competition starting.
Huh? Yeah, and of course that is the and I know from your perspective, because you're in the same county as the regionals are going to be held.
That's true, yes.
The regionals will be held in Portlaoise on June 3rd to 7th that weekend. So it's a trip to Ireland for some young lady between the ages of 18 and 28. And we will hold our selection event on the 14th of March at Library and Archives Canada. We're going to wrap up, and I wish you an excellent run tomorrow morning.
Thank
a memorable,
you very much.
Memorable
yes,
one.
It certainly will be, yeah.
And you have been listening to the Gaelic Hour here on Chin 97.9 FM. And to help you get you into the Christmas spirit, you know, the sleigh bells are ringing. The snow is on the street out there. It is that wonderful time of year. And I want to thank my sponsors, the Heart and Crown and the Monterey Inn Resort. Without their help, we would not be on the air. And tomorrow evening, we will have a music-filled program for you. And I have to pick the music yet, so we'll go for some Christmas music. This program will be available as a podcast probably in about 20 minutes from now, if I can get into the other studio and work on it fairly quickly. And you can catch that at thegaelichour.ca. And we have all our programs going back to 2005, and they're available there. If you want to send me an email, the email address is austin@thegaelichour.ca. If you have any music selections, send the email also. And other than that, best thing for me to do is just probably stay quiet, let you relax, get on with your weekend, enjoy Sunday. You still have time to get down for breakfast to St. Bridget's. It's pancakes, there's sausages, there's bacon, there's coffee, there's tea. And there's Santa Claus.
Santa Claus.
Most important of all, there's Santa Claus. So until tomorrow night, I want to thank Tom on the other side of the glass for taking care of me this morning. And I want to thank you, the listener. Have a wonderful day. Slán go fóill.